Okay, thank you. So we're going to, we have organized this discussion session following those four lines over here. So I'm going to do the first two items, which are going to be the definition of the model and the models we work with, and which are the free energy landscapes that they have associated to them. And next, I will let Giulio continue with the measurements of some observables in these models. And in the end, Marcus will talk about the connections or the differences between glassiness and many-body localization. So we'll see how we go with time, because there are lots of things to do. We have tried to select the features that we think are the most relevant for this community and for this discussion. But okay, we have to leave aside many, many aspects of glassiness, of course, and we have tried to make the best selection possible in our vision. So everything we're going to tell you about first is derived within what we call mean field models. You will see in which sense these models are mean field. But what I want to stress about these models is that they are solvable, that we can solve analytically with different methods, in different limits, different situations, and that all these methods give a coherent picture. They are consistent, one with the other ones. And then we have different ways to attack these problems with those different methods. They are mean field models, so of course they are not completely realistic. But we also understand which are the limitations of these models, and we know what should be done to go beyond the mean field limits. But of course, this is difficult, and you know, there's where kind of the wall appears. Anyway, so this is the idea of what we want to say. So I will stress here mean field solvable analytically. And, well, of course, the limitations will be apparent from the discussion and the presentation of the models. We also know connections between these models and more realistic cases, and those I will discuss or mention later in the talk, and I'm sure that Giulio and Marcus will as well. So which are these models? So these models are going to be spin models defined with an energy function. That is this one. So there are interaction strengths here that I'm going to tell you how we choose in a second. There are spins. This is a classical model that I will tell you how to make a quantum extension of it. The particular feature is that there is a p here, which is an integer. And this implies that there are interactions between p uplets of spins. So p can be 2, and then you define your model with p equals 2, and this is pairwise interactions, the usual ones. But p can also be larger or equal than 3. And we will see that this choice of p larger than 3 or equal than 3 leads to a kind of a different class of models with different behavior. And you will see how different it is later on. So the spin variables can be easy. Or they can be spherical. So easing means that they take plus or minus 1 values, or spherical, that we have the spherical constraint, global spherical constraint. By summing over all the spins in the sample, d square of them, and you know, making it equal to n. So again, there will be some differences between the cases in which we choose easing or we choose spherical, I will tell you. But for the main part of my talk, the part that we want to discuss here, there won't be such a difference between easing and spherical. Now, what about the JI interactions here? Well, we're going to be interested in the disorder case, where the J's are taken from a Gaussian PDF. So with zero mean. Over this PDF here, and with variance scaled in this way. Okay? So n appears here to the power p minus 1. P factorial appears here. So p is, again, the parameter with which I define this problem. I choose it at the beginning, and then it's fixed. J is the strength of the interactions that I will set to 1 later, not to carry it through my expressions. And, well, 2 is a convention. So this is the choice of the problem. This order is in the interaction strength. And just to give you some examples which make this definition of the problems clearer. So if I take p equals to 2, and I don't take these other interactions, but I take interactions which are ferromagnetic-like, so ji1, i2 equals to j larger than 0. Let me signal that here there's a minus sign. So this is a Q-revised ferromagnetic model. If I scale to have a good thermodynamic limit, the j's with n. So they're no longer taken from this PDF, they are deterministic, they all take the same value, and I scale them with 1 over n to have a good thermodynamic limit in the problem. So this is the Q-revised ferromagnetic system, and I will recall features of it in a second. Otherwise, if p is still 2, I work with easing spins, but disordered in this way. This is the SK model of spin classes. And if p is larger than 3, we call it the p-spin model. Okay. Either easing or aspheric. This p-spin model is the one that is linked to the random energy model in the limit of p going to infinity. And it's also linked to other problems of interest in glassiness, like hard spheres, enlarged dimensionality. We will not talk about this, but just to say that it also has a connection with the problem of particles in interaction in real space, only that in the limit of the dimensionality of space going to infinity.
Excuse me. Yes. To get the random energy model, do I need to introduce random couplings or uniform couplings?
No, it's random.
Random.
Yeah. But this is super. Okay. Now, I said that this problem can be quantized, so it can be quantized in two different ways, if you wish. In the easing case, well, I can make the spins live in SU2, another transverse field. Or in the spherical case, what I can do is I can add a kinetic energy. So let's say that, make it here, I can make it SU2 plus transverse field. Or add kinetic energy in the form of a term of this kind added to the Hadamard. Okay, and then the pi's and the s's are operators that commute in the usual way. Okay, so this is for the definition of the problems we will deal with. So, okay. So let me start from recalling what one does. For instance, when one wants to understand the paramagnetic ferromagnetic transition in the context of the Q-revised problem. So I'm going to present everything I'm going to say after now. It's going to be classical, but at the end I will say how this extends to quantum mechanics, and then Marcus and Julio certainly will add to that. So we'll see how it goes with time. So if I leave it to them or I said more myself. So the Q-revised what happens? Well, there is another parameter which is quite evident to identify, so it's the average magnetization density in the problem, which is, I'm calling M here, and it's a global object, okay? It's not local, it's global. I could also say that M is the same as a local average of the spin. Now, one can construct a free energy density as a function of this order parameter that takes different forms, of course, depending on the temperature at which one looks at the problem and depending on this value j, which is here. So you have something like this with a single minimum at m equals 0 for high temperature situations in the paramagnetic phase when t, well, I set j to 1, so when t is larger than tc. Then I have a flat thing at tc, and then I have the double well sort of structure at t smaller than tc, the two different from zero values of m, which are possible. And from here, one understands the second order phase transition, one understands the high temperature phase, one understands the ferromagnetic phase at low temperature. Of course, the critical exponents are wrong compared to three-dimensional cases, but the phenomenology of the problem is captured by this model and by this treatment. Now I want to try to do the same thing, but for the disorder problem. So what happens for the disorder problem? So the first thing that one realizes is that one cannot deal with the global order parameter like this one, but that these averages here will depend on the site at which one works. So there will be an mi there. And I will try to look at this sort of free energy landscape as a function of these mi's at fixed realization of the disorder potential. So trying to do exactly the same thing as this, but now for a fixed realization of the JAJs taken from the probability distribution, which is Gauss, and with these statistics, and see how it looks like. So the extension of what I'm plotting here will be something like this. We're on this flat part, this plane. Actually, I have n directions. So in the limit of n going to infinity, this is an infinite dimensional space on which I'm working. I'm trying to construct a surface on it, which is this free energy density as a function of the mi's. So this can be done. So this can be done analytically. So the same construction that is done over here can be done for the disorder problems like these ones. It's done with a method which is called cavity method or TIP, Gonzalez, Anderson, Palma. So I'm not going to show you how it's done. If you're interested, we can discuss it, but we're going to show you the results. Okay? So the results are such that a kind of classification arises depending on which is the choice of P, either 2 or larger than 3. And the kind of spins that one's working with. So a particular case is p equals 2 spherical. This is sort of trivial. We can be shown that it's basically like this problem over here is representing the kind of all the disorder transition of a simple kind. So forget about that case. So what we are going to discuss is p equals 2 Ising, which is the Sharon-Tokay-Patrick model for spin classes, or p larger or equal than 3, Ising or spherical will be the same, at least for this discussion. There are small differences, but I'm not going to discuss them today. They are not important for us. So what happens in the SK model? This is P equals 2 Ising, I recall. So what happens is that this F here, I'm going to draw it, drawing a line for this plane, but of course you have to remember that this is a large dimensional space.
Can you please define f of mi? And we can use, just to understand it, can you please define?
Yes, okay.
For this I, you're defining free energy?
Yes.
So, how do I know it's f?
It's a function of all the m's.
All m's, okay.
Yes.
It's a curly bracket.
I should put the curly brackets here.
Okay.
Like this. So it's just an extension of this one. only that, I have to take care of the fact that I cannot deal with just one value. I have to take all of them into account. They're not equal, all of them. Okay, so this is, I'm going to draw it like this. This is n-dimensional, I recall. Now, at high temperatures, well, we have the paramagnetic state. We call it TS, the static transition temperature. Now, when I go down, I will also have that this harmonic well becomes flat. And at just below, there will be many small wells that appear at T slightly smaller than TS. And if I still go down, what I will see is that each of these divides into many more of them. So I'm just roughly going to draw it like this. And this division and subdivision and subdivision occurs at just every single little change in temperature that I do below the critical temperature. So it's like if below the critical temperature, there is like a sequence, if you wish, of second order phase transitions in which each well divides in many of them.
So is there, was the analogous picture in sort of via in we relax this mean field assumption, like if it's in finite dimension?
Well, this we will discuss later. Okay, let me for the moment focus on the mean field cases, which I know how to solve and for which what I'm going to tell you is true. Then, for finite dimensional cases, there are no exact results. So then, one can discuss. Everyone has its own opinion, and it becomes a little bit hand-wavy. So I prefer not to say so much about finite dimensions. We can later discuss what can hopefully be done in finite dimensions, but okay, there are no analytical results for finite dimensions.
Well, sorry, just so is that picture really for one disorder realization you're still thinking about?
Yes, I'm thinking about fixed disorder realization. Then one can also think about the average of this object, F of MI. And I'm going to write a J here to stress the fact that it depends on the disorder realization. But then I can also average it and then see that these features will remain. I mean, that you will still have
the solution of the TS for each disorder realization?
Yes, you can have fluctuations of the TS for each disorder realization if you work at n finite. Then you can see fluctuations. But in the limit of n going to infinity, there's one.
So what is the height of these fluctuations? Is
exactly. So the height of these fluctuations is important because in this problem, one can estimate them. It's not that those we cannot really compute exactly, but one can estimate them to be over n to some power. So a power of n. Okay? So this is why I'm drawing them small in my picture. I'm not drawing them very, very big.
And the power is known?
Not exactly.
Less than one?
Yes, less than one, okay.
Less than one.
But it's not known exactly, so it depends, yeah. So. But just the fact that it's power law, this is quite well established.
This is one. This is energy density.
Yes.
So that is energy. It shouldn't be negative power, but it should be so free energy.
No, it's not free energy density.
No, this is total. Okay, it depends on whether he said it's
yeah,
like
yeah,
one
I thought
or
it was a free energy.
Yes, free energy totals.
So in other words, it's less of these barriers are softer than for the usualizing model.
Yes, exactly,
model.
Exactly. It's very soft. The SK model is super soft, which makes it quite peculiar.
Okay. These are somehow domain walls. If this was a finite dimensional problem, I would think of them as domain walls in different states. Right,
yeah. Okay. So this is not the problem that will interest us so much today, but I'm showing it for comparison with the following one, which is the P-spin, which is more interesting. In many cases, it has more structure. So,
excuse me.
Yes.
Since you already mentioned possibility of quantizing these things, these structures in are obtained from classical stat mech.
Yeah, but you can do it quantum mechanical. as well.
Quantum mechanics, adding a little bit of quantum mechanics doesn't
change it so much. No, this we will say at the end, but it doesn't change it so much. We will say some words about how it changes, but not very important for what we want to say. Okay, so now for the P-spin. So the P-spin is very, very different. So I will again start by writing here this n-dimensional space with all the MIs. And the FJ is here. So first, well, at very high temperature, and I want to say T larger than TB. Then you will see why did they change names. You have, again, a paramagnetic situation in which you have just one minimum. And this minimum is located at all the MIs equal to 0. Then I start going down in temperature, and what I see is that at this TB, there is this same one, which I continue here, but then there are other ones. Actually, they appear before the other ones. But to keep the discussion a little bit shorter, I'm writing it just at TD, what's going on? And at TD, what's going on is that, okay, these are all at the same level. One is not, but it should be. So it's kind of like what happens with the first order phase transition, in the sense that there are other metastable states that, you know, reach the same level as the paramagnetic state that you had already. There are many of these. As I said, these ones appeared before, but let's just look at them here. And there are so many that they are actually exponential in the number of spins times something which one calls an entropy that actually depends on temperature. And this k, which is here, is the index of these objects in the sense that I can distinguish the ones which are actual minima from the ones which are saddles of different kinds with an index that tells me how many positive or negative directions there are along these saddles. Yes?
And the barriers are now high n?
They are much higher. They are exponential in n with something in front of them. And not only this, there is another thing that appears, which is some flat region. And we call the threshold, and then we will see why it's called the threshold. Okay, so, yeah.
In principle, these side values are higher by T times sigma k.
Sorry, what do you say?
The frozen states are higher by T times sigma k, no? And the total free energy.
Yes, right, you're right, yes. Okay.
That's if you count all of them, right? If you look at single one, that's at the same level.
No, the single ones are higher. But
the single ones are higher, but they mix together. This is what I wanted to say before. Okay, this is a detail, but the thing is that if this you cannot access if you do this kind of tap cavity approach. Now, if you look at just the partition function of your problem, and you look at how the free energy, the actual free energy, not the one that depends on the all the parameters, but the free energy is a function of temperature, behaves, you don't see anything peculiar at TD. Nothing happens. It's continuous. It's, you know, just very normal function. So it's just the continuation of what you had in this paramagnetic state above TD that goes on below TD until another point that we will discuss later. But what happens is that at this TD, all these states that I said that appear before, they get mixed together. They are combined in such a way that they behave as the paramagnet. But they are not the paramagnet. They are something else. In the sense that here, the MIs are not equal to 0, as they are here. They're different from 0. So let me write it here. They're all different from zero, and they're all different from one state to the other.
Is there a distribution for the spread of the minima, the secondary minima in some sense? Are they all at the same energy? Or?
No. There are lots of things going on. There are many that appear at different levels, but I'm just focusing on these ones. There are other ones, and one can count them. And this, you can. What you are asking me is to, if you wish, count the number that you have with a different index at a given level of free energy. This can be done as well, but for the moment, I'm not. I'm just making.
I'm a little confused about how you get an exponentially large barrier height, because it seems like if I take every term in the Hamiltonian, set it to be positive, I still just get something like n cubed or something terms. Right? I mean, how do I get an exponentially large energy scale in n?
The energy scale is not exponentially.
No.
So what's the barrier?
Free energy density.
Oh, okay, just because the entropy is so huge.
That there are these things, if you want to go above, you really have to do a lot of things.
Not exponential.
Yeah, no. Okay, so if you do a calculation in equilibrium, I just want to stress this thing. If you want to do a calculation, with usual thermodynamic, you don't see it. You don't see anything. But it's hidden in this mixture of states that now appear and now win.
Yes, sir. So you said that they appear at MI0, but they're also paramagnetic. How do we?
No, it's not that they are. Imagine that. Well, I'm simplifying a little bit, but imagine that all these MIs are different from zero here, they are different from zero there, they are different from zero there. But if you do a sum over all of them, then you get zero. I mean, simplifying a little bit, but it's roughly that what's going on.
Can I just ask a general question? I don't know if this is what's done in the calculations. When these are some elaborate versions of symmetry breaking.
Yes.
And so usually the only careful way of dealing with symmetry breaking is to introduce explicitly symmetry breaking fields and
yes.
Take them off.
Yeah, this can be done.
In spin glasses, the only thing I know of is this double replica sort of a thing where you make the replicas interact. Is that basically how these...
That's one possibility to do it, but there's also another possibility, which is with pinning fields, that was done roughly at the same time mm-hmm. as the couple replica calculation by Rémy Monasson. So. But yeah, the two of them can be.
How do you introduce pinning fields if you don't know the pattern of order?
But you can introduce random fields and play with those. And there are tricks to them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So there is this peculiar temperature where the organization of states changes, and there are all these ones that start to play a role thermodynamically, although you don't see them. In a trivial thermodynamic calculation, let's say. Now, what happens if you go below, still below? So if you go still below, these ones will come down, the other things will happen. I forgot to stress the fact that there is this flat region as well. Flats with, if you compute the Hessian of the free energy density here, you will see that there are lots of flat regions there. So if I still go below, forget about the paramagnet, it just... Yes.
In the flat region, the magnetization pattern is just also ran...
It's non-trivial, it's non-zero, it's non-trivial, but you can imagine it as, imagine a plateau in a mountain. There are some regions where the mountains go up, but there are many regions in which it's a plateau. And then you can have a labyrinth in this situation, because you have to think that the base on which you have this plateau is infinite dimensional. So you have a lot of dimensions to choose. And in most of these directions, your system is flat. Your landscape is flat.
And it's much, much better than this other picture.
Much larger, what do you mean?
Much flatter than this.
Ah, flatter, yes, it's much flatter than this other picture. Yes, yes. Yes. Good. So, here you still have this threshold. So the threshold is still there. Then there are these other ones. There's the barriers. Like this. And basically what happens at TS is that the number of these other objects is no longer exponential in n. It becomes power law perhaps in n, but you don't have so many at TS. They start disappearing. So you don't have so many. And at TS, what happens is that there is what people call an entropy crisis. And basically, you remain with just a few. Say that this disappears. A few. And the low-lying few that you have are the ones that are chosen in the static phase transition. So this TS here is a static phase transition.
So
and this is a dynamic phase transition, and then you will see why. Yes, tell me.
So few is order 1 or order n?
N to some power, but not exponential.
And so p equals 2, you always have a polynomial number of solutions.
P equals 2 is it's too simple.
But it has polynomial numbers, in the sense that the new feature is this intermediate temperature range.
Exactly. This one you don't have in the p equals 2. But in the p equals 3 or larger, you do, because you have this intermediate region with all these metastable states with very hard barriers between them.
Is this entropy crisis a feature of long-rangedness of the mean, or?
That's another one of the difficult questions. You know, it happens in infinite models, it's a fact. Now, in finite dimensional cases are people who believe that this still happens and people that believe that no. And it's the question about whether there is a phase transition, a static phase transition, a truly glassy static phase transition or not. And this one nobody knows the answer, so it's a question of that.
But maybe I this structure seems to be there.
Yes.
Meaning exponential number of metastable states and this function sigma of k increase. Then whether it goes to zero, we don't know.
Yeah.
But I mean, the structure is there even. And in finite dimension, if you do it, if you do a simulation, you can see.
I guess, is the entropy crisis in the minimum tied to a microcanonical entropy being lesser also to less than TC, or there's nothing strange about it? Is there, suppose I just computed the microcanonical entropy, counted the states.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then that there's below TS, there's no. Strange
behavior.
Does that go,
does
the microcanonical entropy density go to zero, or it doesn't?
No, because you have some entropy inside the state.
Okay.
But
so
it's just the number of
sorry.
But sometimes we distinguish what we call the complexity or the counting the number of states without distinguishing the number of configurations that you have within a state, because you have many there. So there you kill the remaining entropy or the kind of harmonic between inverted commas entropy. And then that one goes to zero. The complexity goes to zero at TS, the one of the states. But what Julia is saying is that there still you have an entropy because you have vibrations.
But even that goes away when p goes to infinity, I guess.
Well, the p goes to infinity is, no, it doesn't. There is a peculiarity about the p going to infinity, which is something that we discussed previously, is that both these TS depend on p, and TD depends on p as well. And what happens is that you see that there is a p factorial here, and there is a sum that goes in the way I chose for smaller than. It would be different if I put different. So you have to be careful about how you scale things with p. Now, in one way or another one that you scale things with p, you make this one go to zero and this one remain finite, or you make this one remain finite and this one go to infinity.
So about the random energy model?
In the random energy model, exactly.
There's two different random energy models.
No, it depends on how you scale this thing with p.
Okay, you can make that choice, I see.
Yeah, so, you know, you either keep the static transitions. So for example, Derrida in his paper, he was not dealing with dynamic transitions. He was not looking at this. So in the way he scaled, he had this one finite. So this one, for him, went to infinity, only that he didn't look at it. In the way I'm doing the scaling here, which is slightly different from his, this one remains finite, and this one goes to zero, if p went to infinity.
I'm still a little confused about the shape of the landscape. So at TD, you're drawing the threshold as being on the same level as the deep wells, or at the zero state.
Yeah.
And okay, so that stays where it is, and all the other states move down below it in the intermediate temperature regime. Okay.
This one remains, in the intermediate temperature regime, this one remains higher than all these.
But at the transition, they're all degenerate.
They're, almost all degenerate. But the thing, yes, as Marcus was saying, is that these are higher, but then they combine together and they go here. So, what else did I want to
quick,
say?
Yes. Question. So, is there...
Go ahead.
Yeah. Is there a sense in which TD minus TS can be tuned arbitrarily close to zero? For example, if I start with the p equals 2 case and I start sprinkling a few p equals 3 couplings.
Absolutely. You can do mixtures of p equals 2 plus p equals 3 or p equals 4.
Right.
And then you can tune exactly what you say. And you can do expansions around this case, adding a little bit of that.
Does one understand the nature of this intermediate regime better, or is it just difficult?
I don't know. Okay. I know that from the dynamics I understand it, and I understand there are things that I can understand if I do the kind of expansions that you say, and which are nice.
Later.
But I'm not sure it's very
useful. So what are the dynamical quantities that diverge at TD?
Okay, so let me say, so about dynamics, very quickly, because otherwise I'm eating all their time. So which kind of dynamics one can do? So let's say that I take the continuous case, the spherical case, I do Langevin dynamics. Or I take the Ising case and I do Monte Carlo, for example. So I start from a random initial condition, so somewhere up here. It's one possibility, a paramagnetic state. And I quench it below TD, for example. So what happens? In that case, what happens is that this evolves and it goes to the threshold. If I'm taking it below TD, actually I'm looking at this block, it goes to the threshold. So the threshold acts kind of as a basing of attraction. Let's say it in this way. So all typical configurations of high temperature approach this threshold. And this I can see in different ways, but in particular I can see it if I look at the limit of times going to infinity, and now I will precise what I mean by this, of the energy density, so total energy divided by N. And then I see that this goes to the value of the energy density here. And this t going to infinity means large times, but always order 1 with respect to n. This is the kind of calculation that we know how to do. Now, if I were able to do analytically, or if I do numerics, where I can do it, times that grow with n faster than this, that go beyond, that depend on n somehow, what I will see is that the system eventually penetrates below this threshold and it starts going into these states. And this I can see in simulations. Maybe I can show this picture that we prepared to show this. So, and then I leave. Well, the time it takes, I can draw it on the blackboard. So, is it here? Okay. And then go down. This is simulations with Monte Carlo, is in case p equals 3, some temperature below TD, initial condition which is paramagnetic. So you see that at the beginning it gets relatively fast, then it gets blocked. So here you have to imagine that there is, you know, it entered one of these states, then we'll go down. So this is one realization of the disorder. There are other ways of seeing these blocking states, which is like doing this kind of plots. This is the same thing. This is energy density as a function of time. And what we are doing here is, again, following it in function of time, but putting some force, extra force, that kicks the system out of one of these wells when it entered the well. So it just takes above the threshold and back again, so you can see this blocking situations. So these are simulations. Now, these sort of things
are all done on infinite range models?
Yes, 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 yes. For finite values of n, and n's 100, well, actually, Julius are 64, I think. Let's say between 64 and 100, roughly. If you use as n, which is too small, you wouldn't see it, because you don't have the barriers between the states. So you need some large number of n. Not too large, because otherwise you cannot jump over the barriers. So, you know, there's a little bit of fine-tuning of the number of n to see this structure with the simulation. Another thing that can be done is, analytically, you can tune your initial conditions to be in one of these states. This can be done. And then once it is there, you can see the following evolution, whether the system goes out of the state or not. In times that are scaling with n in this way, or the 1 in n, it won't. So then what you see, if you look, for example, at the correlation function between time t and the initial time of one spin or all the spins, you will see that this quantity approaches a finite value that you can roughly associate with the width of that that well. So there are different ways of seeing this structure, either analytically or numerically. So I guess that maybe it's time for me to stop, and Julia will continue with the other. So just one more thing is that all this can be reproduced quantum mechanically, so you can do the calculations with the tab, with the statics or with the dynamics, and see that there are not so many changes, but then they will discuss them, otherwise I will continue to speak.
Observables, or more, so this is what you get when you meet the theory. Now let's say that you have a real system, three dimensions, either experiment or simulation. What you should look for, what do you see? And well, and maybe there is something interesting also for many body representation. So the first thing is, people wonder for a long time what would be a good order parameter for the transition. So you have a time scale, so the time scale, for example, for a liquid that undergoing gas transition increase of 14 order of magnitude, so very much. But you would like to see something that is changing, and this is not a normal liquid. So what would be the good order parameter? So what is clear is that if you look to the thermodynamics, you don't see anything. So for example, I don't know, in a liquid, you can look to the density-density correlation function, which is called the structure factor. So this is the density of wave vector k. You don't see anything. So no structure that there is something going on. So actually, what you have to see, you have to look at dynamical variables, so the two-point function, actually. Dynamical correlation function. And so you can define, yeah.
So just to clarify, you're thinking about the term TD, the transition TD, or both the TD and TS?
So, well, now I'm taking really perspective, so away from infinite theory. So let's say I have an interacting particle system. I just do a simulation or I do an experiment. So you can think that now I'm up at high temperature, I decrease the temperature, I see that the system is slower and slower. But I want to see, I mean, what are the typical observables that people look at? So in general, they look at dynamical correlation function. So
Well, so maybe you should say that in finite dimension it's not clear whether TP or TS exists.
Is the transition.
I
would say.
Yeah, the question is whether they are crossovers or transitions.
Yeah, I would say something.
Probably they are crossovers.
Say something later. Yeah. For the moment, I would say not theory, just what you should do. So typical dynamical correlation function typically are a local observable at position, so position x at time t, and then we want the fluctuation, let's say again at position x at time zero. Okay? O is a local observable. You can think, for example, if you have a spin system, well, you could think that this is sigma x z, so it's sigma, let's say sigma I z at time t, sigma I z at time zero. Or, well, this is a spin system in a liquid, it would be something like rho of k at time t, rho minus k at time zero. So just a measure of fluctuation. So what do you see if you look at these kind of things? Yeah?
But can you define that average? If you do classical diagram, everything was initial?
So it's the average over the equilibrium dynamics of the system. So Newton equation, if you want a closed system.
You have quench disorder or something?
So, okay, so that's a good question. So in liquid, normal liquid, you know, just interacting more, so no quench disorder. If I consider spin glasses, there would be quench disorder, but you can. Well, in that case, you can take either the average over the disorder, like this, or you just average over space, which is the same. And the dynamics, so let's say that you can have, let's say, two types of dynamics. Here, the system is isolated, so in liquids, you just do Newton equation. Or the system is coupled to a bath, and then you have some kind of stochastic dynamics. And I will discuss what's the difference just at the beginning. So what do you see? So what do you see? You have two different types of behavior. So there is one behavior which is the behavior characteristic of liquids which has a glass transition. So this is the correlation function as a function of, typically as a function of length of time. This is how it's plotted. And so it starts from a certain volume, which can always normalize to be one. And then what you get a plateau. And then it goes down to zero. So you know that these are fluctuations, so these are connected averages, so it has to go to zero in equilibrium. But then what you see is that when you decrease the temperature or increase the density, if you have a system in which you have, for example, other spheres, this plateau actually becomes longer and longer. So what happens is the time scale here is increasing when you decrease the temperature. It's increasing of 14 order of magnitude if you do it in experiments and of 8 order of magnitude if you do simulation. So this is what you get if you look at the glass transition. Now if you look to spin models, so disorder spin models that have a glass transition, then the phenomenology is different. So the phenomenology, so this is the glass transition. So for the spin glasses, do you see if I right here? So for spin glasses, actually, let me just put some terminology. So this plateau value is called Edward Anderson parameter, historically. And here, if there was a glass transition, you see that the time scale would diverge. And at the glass transition, you would have a finite value. That this would go on forever. Okay. In spin glasses, instead, what you get is something like this, C of t, which goes down. That goes down to zero, so there is no plateau. It goes down slower in a slower and slower way. And if there was a transition, then just below the transition, you would have something which has, let's say, just below, so at Tc minus epsilon, you would have a Edward Anderson parameter that would grow continuously. So there is clearly a difference between the two. Here you have a discontinuous behavior of QEA. Here we have a continuous behavior of QEA. So we say this is the spin glass case. And moreover, just phenomenologically, here the time scale increases very, very fast. So a typical good fit here is a time scale. So in the case of the glass transition, if you try to do fit from experiments or also from simulation, the time scale seems to go like C t minus t0. So a divergence like this. And in this case, instead, I mean, we know that it goes like t minus t zero to some negative power, let's call it gamma. Okay? So it's a different here. This is much more strong, much more strong.
So, sorry, what are these two cases?
So this is liquids that have a glass transition, and these are spin glasses, so these are the spin models.
Is there infinite range spin models, or experiment range, or
these three-dimensional model?
Sorry, finite range.
Yeah, and actually now you can ask. I mean, if you do the same thing in mean field model, so you would see in mean field model you would see this difference between the behavior of the correlation function. The only thing is that within spin models for the problem of the glass transition, well, as Leticia told you, you remain stuck at the threshold. So actually, you cannot see actually the time scale, which becomes very, very large, which would correspond to jump between metastable state. Okay, so maybe this was related to the question. I mean, in finite dimension, metastable states are metastable, they don't live forever. And so the dynamics from one metastable state to the other is what makes the dynamics very, very slow. Yeah.
And is there any understanding of what sets the scale of the Edwards-Anderson order parameter in this continuous case?
Sorry, what's the scale of?
So there's this, it seems to me that as you approach the glass transition from the normal phase,
yeah,
you already can predict the value of the Edwards-Anderson order, yes, parameter, even when the system is ergodic.
Yes.
Or at least when you can equilibrate it. So is there a sense, makes either model systems or some control experiments when you change pressure, is that value of the Edwards-Anderson order parameter, the large value of the Edwards-Anderson, is that sensitive to all things in the thermodynamics? Or?
Yeah, you can change this value.
Yeah.
It's in general, you cannot, change it a lot, but yeah, if you change the pressure, for example, or if you change, the type of molecules or type of particle, then the value here will change.
Is it understood? I mean, is there a simple
theory? Yes. I mean, if you want to get the value, from the theory point of view, it's not very interesting for the dynamics, but if you want to get this value in an approximate way, yes, you can do it.
Excellent.
And so, just so that everything is clear for everybody, seeing that the Edwards-Anderson parameter is finite, it means that, so here the system remains trapped in a metastable state, and this metastable state has an average density profile. And the average density profile is really different, let's say, of order one from the flat profile. And this is QEA, roughly. Here, instead, it's going to happen, but it's going to happen, continuously. So you will have the same thing, but it will grow continuously when you go below this. Yeah.
Can you roughly describe how do they do these experiments?
I want to know the experiments. Well, on this. You can do so in molecular liquids, you can do neutron scattering or other type of things. You can also, the same behavior you get in colloids, which are like R spheres. In that case, you just in microscopic imaging, you can just see how the particle moves. So, in that case, you get all the information that you get in a simulation, but it's an experiment. And in this case, it's spin glasses again, while you have different kinds of experiments to get this. They are not particularly difficult experiments.
Okay. I'm still going to relate to the perspective. There might be a difference between DS and DE from the point of view.
From DS and DE?
Yes. Suppose there was a vector you see one.
In this case? Well, so actually what happens, so the model that had a TS different from TD, what happens is that, so what you can think is that when you, so this curve, you can think that this a TD, in a sense. So TD becomes a crossover by dimension. So it's the point at which you start to see really metastable states. And then given TD, the dynamics is dominated by jump over barrier. So there is a point at which you really start to see the plateau, and the relaxation time starts to increase. This will be the finite dimensional, vestige of TD. And then the time scale starts to increase extremely fast. And this is where you start to be below TD and jump over the barriers.
And TS?
That's the picture.
And TS?
Sorry?
TS? What would happen at TS?
Well, at TS, if such a thing exists, or if there is an entropy crisis, the time scale would diverge with probably a low, which is like this, with some power at TD.
So it is not believed to exist in the finite range model?
That's the data. I mean, because the experiments, of course, you can never get there because the time scale increase of 40 order of magnitude, at a certain point the system goes out of equilibrium. And then there are, let's say, two or three different schools of thoughts. There are people that think that there will be a linear transition, and others say that actually the physics is a different problem at this point. So it's a different problem. Yeah.
If you look at the dynamics of the mean field model, does it see anything at TS, or does it just freeze out completely at TZ and then just take it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's freeze at TD. So on time scale of order one, it freeze at TD.
Okay.
Then from TD to TS, the time scale is exponentially n. So you don't see well the dynamics.
You see the dynamics at the threshold?
At the threshold.
At the threshold. So if you do the calculation of the correlation function at a temperature below TD, you would see something like what Giulio wrote over there, the picture.
The first half of it, you mean?
Yeah, the this part over here. And something like this, you would see. And the interpretation is that in this threshold, as I said, you can imagine that it's like a labyrinth. Imagine that it's like a labyrinth with many flat directions. So when it's vibrating in these channels of the labyrinth, it goes quickly to, well, relatively quickly, to this plateau value. And then, where it, you know, the diffusion along the channels is the one that makes you decrease your correlation below this plateau. Imagine that you have like a...
I'm a little confused. So the first rapid dynamics, that's just like microscopic, it gets me down to the plateau, that's when I hit the threshold, and I'm wandering around the threshold.
Once you are at the threshold...
I'm still not seeing the metastable states, though.
The threshold is a metastable state.
Yeah.
It's like a bunch of them.
Yeah.
It's like an ensemble.
At the threshold, they're really forming. So the dynamics slow down because there are some flat directions that emerge. And then once you go below, there are no more flat directions, you have to start to... jump.
Then you need to jump when you go below the threshold.
I'm confused about what the word threshold means. It seems like, so up there you're using thresholds in two different senses, right? Because the threshold, which is basically TD at which these features form.
No, I'm not, sorry, TD is like a dynamical critical temperature,
okay.
And the threshold is some part of the free energy landscape that happens to be flat, mostly flat.
Okay.
Apart from some...
But the difference from the sort of deep metastable states that you've also drawn...
Yeah.
That these are... truly caging, let's say, metastable states, truly trapping metastable states, that to get out of these you have to jump. While to get moving around this part, it's flat, so you just have to find your direction and go.
So what is the evidence that you have in speaking?
Well, from the, for example, for the TAP calculation, you can sit here and look at the Hessian of this TAP free energy function, and then you see that you have lots of zero modes, zero, zero modes of the Hessian. So you have a lot of flat directions.
The infinite range case.
Yes.
So
in
the short range case?
No, in the short range case,
there are some simulations. But it's true that there's nothing sharp. Because you can always find, it's not sharp in fact.
It's not sharp. It's the idea that we all have is that this picture is smoothened in finite dimensions, and then, you know, nothing is fully trapping, and flat is not so flat, and so on and so forth.
I wanted to describe this thing because, again, glass transition or spin glass transition, you can think that are dynamical transition. Okay, for the spin glass, it's not completely true. For the glass transition, maybe it's not completely true, but it's true that the dynamics becomes very slow. And so when you think in many body localization, well, there is something similar, so I guess, I think our bottom line will be that gas transition, many body localization are really physically different. Nevertheless, there are some questions and some things that have been thought, for example, in the context of the gas transition that can be useful in the context of many body localization. So the first thing, and I will not discuss it now, but you can think about what picture you're going to see in a many body localized system when you approach the transition from the delocalized space. But let's postpone the discussion. This is the first thing. Yeah?
Can I ask a very, very simple question? So my understanding of why by now in the many body localization community there's no debate whether there is a transition or not is because there is a proof of existence of many body localization.
Yep.
We believe in the existence of diffusion, and hence the efforts are somehow focused on understanding details rather than. Is there anything like a proof of existence of glass or spin glass phase?
Okay, for the spin glass, yes.
In what model?
In the Eldorados on 3D, I think it's. In the Eldorados on 3D, I think at low temperature it's proven.
In 3D, at low enough temperatures, there's a proof
of rigor. What is the transition in low temperature phase? Not clear, but that there is a transition, yes. In the case of the glass transition, things are much more difficult. So in certain models, but then the people question whether this is a good model for glasses. In certain models, there is a proof. And then, in general, I mean, in models that are really good model of what's going on, then you don't like it. Because it's very difficult, actually, to make a proof model. We can discuss later on. Okay, the other thing that I wanted to discuss again, because it can be useful for maybe for general localization, is that for a long time people say, okay, I saw that the glass transition, the time scale is increasing very much, so it's maybe a transition. You need it?
No, but I think they're recording.
Yes. I think Leticia feels like you're about to say something really important.
Exactly.
So for a long time, people say wanted to know whether there was a growing length, because this is what you get in general in a phase transition. And so where is the length? So there have been a lot of work about lengths, and now I will summarize it very fast. So the way in which people have understood how to find the length is the following thing. So here is this is the correlation function. So if you find a local correlation function in this way, sorry, C of x, an instantaneous value of the correlation function, which is O x of t, O x of 0. Okay, this is instantaneous variable. And now you can, if you buy that this, I mean, the correlation function is the order parameter, then you know what you have to do. You have to look to the fluctuation of the order parameter to get the length. And so what you have to look for, the equivalent of a correlation function that gives you the length, is this one. So this is the fluctuation of the correlation function at position x with the fluctuation of the correlation function at position y. So this is one thing that people have to look at. And then there is another thing, which is, let's say, this is a correlation, this is a correlation function, which actually is a four-point function. Then you can look at response. So what you can say is that, okay, let's look at how the correlation in x, correlation function in x, which measures the relaxation in x, change if I perturb the system in y. Okay? Again, if there is some dynamical correlation, so if I perturb the system here, I will see that, well, here the dynamics is going to change. And then, well, people have also looked at, say, 3, which is an integrated version of this one, which is called chi of t, which is just the integral over dx minus y of this function, so which I will call gx minus y and t. And so if you, so in this, roughly speaking, you expect that if you find the length here, so if you find that this is going to become longer and longer range, when you take the integral here, this should go like, let's say, if I look this the time, which is equal to the relaxation time, you expect that this will go like the typical length to some power. Then, let's say, in principle, it's less than t, can be less than t. And so what has been found, and maybe I will show you, if Elisa can help me, with your computer. Two figures. Then we have also to decide what to do, because it's one hour that we are speaking.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
When you wrote down the diverging time scale, how is it diverging in a finite time system? How does it diverge in a perfect system size?
If you take a finite system size, and kind of so if you have a finite system, see, yes, the time scale increases, and then at a certain point it stops. So in this case, t equals like exponential n.
Exponential of n?
Yes. Meaning that, I mean, you can try to find, if you do some finite size scaling, this is what you get.
Okay. And it's really going to be this n to the power alpha.
Problem. Again, I mean, let's say two school of thought, one would say yes.
Okay, so this is what I wanted to show. So this is the correlation function, just to give you, so this is a molecular dynamics simulation in three dimensions. You have interacting particles, it's a mixture of Lennard-Jones particle, and this is, well, this is a, it's a density-density correlation function, and this is what you get. So you see that the time increase, so this, you decrease the temperature, and the time scale here increases very fast, here you see the Edward Anderson parameter, and you see that one, it's pretty deep already in simulation. Okay? This is just to show you something that maybe is more easy to grasp. This is just the least square displacement of a given particle, so how much it diffused. So what you see is that at the big subparticle rattle a little bit around a certain position, then they become trapped. It's a not very long time they get diffusion. Okay. And now I wanted to show you something that should.
Sorry, what is TC here? Well, what we would call it TC from this plot?
I think TC in this case, if it exists, should be around 0.23, something like this. So here, I mean, here, the last curve is 0.43. We are clearly above the transition. So something that should surprise you, or maybe not, is now but or no but. So here, the dynamics that I can take Monte Carlo, I can take Newtonian dynamics, or I can take Langevin. Here is the difference, which you almost can't see. So here, when the time scale is already very large, you have the three dynamics, Monte Carlo, Newtonian, so and stochastic. So these two is just like coupling to a thermal bath. This one is isolated. And what you see, what is known, is that the short time dynamics is, of course, different, depends on the bath. But the long time dynamics is really the same. You have just to rescale the microscopic time, and you get the same thing. So this means really that, I mean, the glass transition is probably a collective process. And whether you couple the system to a bath or you just use its own dynamics, it's exactly the same. This already should point out a very big difference with many body localization.
What's actually the Hamiltonian? Is it somehow by dispersed liquid? Or?
Yes, in by dispersed liquid, yes.
How do you know that the microdynamical, if I work with similar atmosphere, it's same as this microdynamical? Instead of working with a microcanometer, I'm talking in the classical sense, which is a small energy window. Suppose I can work with the actual single island state in a quantum mechanical. If I had a transverse field and evolved with, we don't know whether it's exactly the same as this microcanometer.
It should be, right? I mean, for all local properties. All local properties, ATH should be the same with the microcanometer.
No, I mean, that's a breakdown in the case of MBA.
No, but I think here we are in the ergodic phase.
But I think that's what I want to check.
No, but I think here the point is that he's looking at a particular correlation function that becomes slow, but if he looks at diffusion, energy diffusion, it's wonderful.
This is thermal conductivity, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, is this thermal conductivity?
No, this is density.
I see certain things freeze, but there's no fluctuation, right?
Even in the glass.
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, there's a lot of glass is an insulator, but my house gets cold in the winter, right? So,
what?
Glass is an insulator, but my house gets cold in the winter anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, there is no issue. I mean, I don't know exactly what you are scared about. But, I mean, here in this regime, the system is ergodic. I mean, all the usual things works. I mean, the point of this figure is just to show that if I change the microscopic dynamics, nothing changes, which is in general what you get in many, let's say, critical phenomena. Maybe if you change some the dynamics, conserve or not some observable, then things can change. But besides this, is let's say there is a universal behavior, and this here there is a universal behavior. So this is just to say that you know that if you take many body of a system. You couple the thermal bath with the coupling of order one, and if it was very slow, it's not going to be a very slow increase. And then the other thing that I wanted to show, well, which was, and then we go very fast, is this function CAL4. So this was the behavior that you get. It has a peak, the time scale, which corresponds to the relaxation time, and then it goes down. The value of this peak is roughly speaking this the length that I to some power. And actually what you see graphically is this. This is a simulation. You have arrows on the particle. This is the distance that the particle has gone in between time zero and time tau the relaxation time. What you see is that you have a big region in which nothing moves, and then there are regions in which you have motion. You don't know how this motion had, I mean, progressed. So you don't know whether it was, at the beginning, was one particle that made the other moves, and then you just see at the fraction of the relaxation time that really motion is correlated. And this is what you see, actually. This is the length that we have. So maybe, I don't know if you want to keep this away. There are no questions. So I will write some questions actually on the board on the relationship with many-body localization, and then I don't know yet to decide what to do.
So this is time dependent. So there's a peak, which corresponds to what when it's about to
take off. This is the peak. So these are different temperatures.
Yeah.
And the peak is on the relaxation bar.
So when it's about to fall off the plateau.
Yeah. It's roughly, it's at this point here. So let me just put some questions in the relationship with main body, and then
I have a very quick question. Since you showed the molecular dynamics data, do people more or less agree that there are no signatures of the glass transition in transport properties or anything? There's just things are freezing, but diffusion constants and anything that you would.
Yes, exactly. This is a good question that I forgot to say.
Maybe subsidiary singularities, if I take some derivatives, if I look at something else related to transport.
Yeah, so exactly. That's a good thought. So let me say it this way. So when I say, is there a length? So if you look at two-point function, from which you can extract diffusion coefficient and transport property, you don't see any length. Of course, they are going down, so the diffusion coefficient is becoming smaller and smaller. But you don't see any length. So in the K behavior, you don't see any nothing. So this is why I mean people.
It's diffusion of particles versus diffusion of energy is probably pretty good. Right?
Yeah, the diffusion of energy is fast, but still, but there is a part I think of the diffusion of energy. The diffusion of energy is fast. So let me just say with the relationship with MBL, so I had some. So first, let's say, in MBL, I think, when you approach the MBL transition coming from the delocalized space, there is the question, what's happening, right? In the transition, first order or second order. So if the time scale diverge, so let's say if the time scale diverge when you approach an N-body localization transition, what you would have? You would have more spin glass, so let's say glass behavior. And spin glass and glass, I mean, these two things. The correlation function would be like this, with an Emmer-Anderson parameter that is growing before the transition, or you expect something which is continuous. Same thing, now if you look at the length, and this I don't know, but maybe you know in the audience. If I want to look at the length, in the case of the many-body localized, when you approach a many-body localization transition, do you need this? It's a fancy way to get the length, or you just take the two-point function for which you extract transport coefficient, and then you see the length. So in the non-interacting case, in principle, yes. I mean, you can look at the localization length in this way. But in a many-body context, especially if you think that there are transition, I don't know, from delocalized, everybody, delocalized, non-everybody, etc., you can wonder whether these type of things are interesting to look at. So the equivalent of this would be the variation of the correlation function at position x if you vary, for example, the strength of the disorder at position y, and this is would be the same. Okay. All right. So this, this is.
So the x correlation function is more like a three-point function.
Sorry, sir. Which one?
I would guess number two is more like a three-point function.
Yes, it's more like a three-point function.
And number one, the quantum system is out of time order.
So it's
I don't know if that matters or not.
Yeah, I don't think it's not, but yeah, it would be. Yeah.
The classical system doesn't matter.
Well, it's a correlation function. You don't have the time order.
No, but I'm just saying, like, as written, if I wanted to try to evaluate this,
yeah,
promote it to quantum mechanics, there's an out of time order.
Yes.
So it's more closely related to the scrambling correlators that
some number of other people who like coming through this building like talking about.
I mean, does it matter? Because it seems like classically there's no operator structure, right? I mean, when you quantize it, like you can choose whatever time ordering you like, right?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe there's one.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't see that it matters. Like, no.
So, okay, speed gas. So this is for, let's say, for CFD and then for the length. So, okay, so I don't know what to do because we are completely out of time. So in principle, I had something on the theory in finite dimension. There are relationship gaps in the NPL. We have bubbles also. and actually, the case in which I told you that one can prove rigorously that there is a gas transition is the case in which there are bubbles. And it's proved rigorously mathematically that there are bubbles there. But I don't know what to do because now, I mean, in principle, I have something to say on the finite theory, and then there is Markov. So what should we stop and continue?
Yeah, I mean, is that okay with the audience? Can we stop and continue?
Immediately. Well, just to let people out.
Well, I mean, actually, what's the vote? Is it that we continue today after break, or should we come back on Thursday or Friday? We have the rooms available.
And this is a good person. I'd prefer to continue today.
Maybe we could continue after like a little break, get the coffee and cookies, and continue after that. Does that seem reasonable?
But we don't have the room.
Oh, well, how long do we have?
We actually have the room
until 2:30.
Okay.
Oh, who has the room for meals?
We something at 4:00.
At 4:00. So maybe that gives us an
idea.
So there is a colloquium at 4:00.
But do we need a break?
We can just go. Yeah.
I mean, realistically, can we wrap up in 25, 30 minutes?
Yeah.
We hope.
Yeah. With Mark.
Yeah, 14. Okay.
I feel like, well, okay, at least maybe we should let people out who want to leave.
Yes.
Can I ask one question? So, you were showing this classical molecular dynamics.
Yep.
For the classical model, I presume, and you were. It has diffusive behavior, and you said it's as body.
Yeah.
But so are you saying if I now make it quantum mechanical, that I have some things which don't compute for it, it will remain as body? That's what we mean.
I don't know. I mean, it's like most likely, yes.
We know cases where it does almost, in fact, all Mannebody localized cases are like that, where that does not happen. If you do classical molecular dynamics, system, there is no transistor, you always find diffusive behavior at long times. Even the red system is many body localized.
Quarks.
Yeah, I'm saying all cases, like, along there.
Your system is able to thermalize classically, so it has its own dynamic classically.
That's what Vadim and David used on.
Tiny diffusion.
Well, they have the spin, classical spin change, basically, with disorder. Because so there's classical chaos at short distances that belongs to that.
Yeah, but I don't think it's a general.
Oh, yeah, so in this system, the complication is also it's more than one dimension. It's more difficult to make by localizing. But I think it's fair to say that one tantalizing possibility is that what's missing from class physics is quantum mechanics.
Yeah.
And actually produces really important effects. Yeah, we don't know. I mean, I think it's a level.
I think while we had the discussion at the very least, how the two things actually interfere, glass transition and body localization, I think you shouldn't think that you take any system that thermalizes classically, you put a little bit of quantum mechanics and then in any body localized. So, of course, you should. I mean, there are some cases in which it's going to do, but if I take the system that I wasn't going out, I described to you, I don't think that the answer is known, and I would be, actually, it's even without this order, so I don't think that if you put quantum mechanics, it will many body localize.
No, I'm just saying we don't know. It's not like we.
Yeah. Well, there is nothing in, let's say, real time quantum dynamics is discontinuous. Okay, so let me. Gone. So remember these two questions that maybe we can discuss later. So in the many body localized case, how is the behavior of the correlation function? Do we need fancy landscape, like in this case, or in just like simple ones? So now I would like to say something on theory in finite dimension. So let me bring it here. So, well, the first things of finite D, let's say D equals 3. So the first thing is, so let's say the free energy landscape feature. So what is believed is that, okay, let's take this case here. So what is believed is that, again, the threshold becomes a crossover. And then in the regime in which, so below TD, so when T is less than TD, and remember that now TD is just a crossover temperature, you have activated dynamics. And actually, within the field theory, you get the time scale, which goes like exponential alpha of n. And in final D, so it's in D equal 3, what you get is that you will break this N by a typical correlation length. So the time scale is believed to go like a length to some power, psi, divided by the temperature. And the length psi, well, as I told you, it increases when you decrease the temperature. Okay? And probably, if there is a transition, it diverges the power law away. Okay, that, this is, okay, if I cut a very long story short, would be the translation of what you get in mean field in finite dimension, but this is, I mean, it's an active area of research. And people are working to try to understand whether this is fully correct and whether there is a transition. But roughly speaking, this is what we think. And then there is actually another school of thought, which is completely different. It's not based on free energy landscape. It's based on entropy bottlenecks. And this is where the bubbles are. So, well, let me just explain the entropy bottlenecks. Imagine that you have two R sphere. Let's say two R disk in a box. Okay. Now, I take the R disk like this. Well, if they are like this, I can move the R disk everywhere in the box. Now, I increase the density, which means I make the R disk bigger. Okay. Now, I'm here. So, I remember actually the glass transition happens decreasing the temperature or increasing the density. You can get in, you can feel that the particles are almost hard. Okay? In this case, you can, well, no, maybe this is too big. Okay? In this case, you can still move, but it's difficult. You have to be, have to fine tune the movements. And here, when you're here, I do like this. Now you're blocked. You're just not able, you cannot go to the position which is here. And so, roughly speaking, in the configuration space, what happens is that here you have the configuration space. Let's say that has two different, parts, which do this part like this or like this. But there is, you can go from one to the other. Here is the same, but now the entropic you have a very small number of parts to go from one to the other, and here you have something which is like this. So the question is, there are people that think that this is what happens actually in a real system. So that you can cause grain, forget about the energy, and then it's really that it's becomes very, very difficult to find a path in order to move. And so there are models that have been defined, which are called kinetically constrained model. And I will not discuss them in detail, but just to give you an idea, are models in which you have particles that jump on a lattice, and they can move only if the number of neighbors is not too large. Okay? The detailed rules depends from one model to the other, but that's the idea. And so in this model, in some of them at least, what you can prove is that there is a glass transition. Yes.
They're engineers, so the free energy landscape is boring.
Exactly. They are engineers, exactly. They're right. These are people that really don't believe all these kind of things. So they engineer in such a way that thermodynamics is completely trivial. But the dynamics is very slow just because of this. And so in this case, actually, you can prove that in some of these models, there is a finite, let's say, temperature or density glass transition. And the physics, and this is actually, well, if you want to know more, is a series of papers that I done with Daniel Fischer and Christina Tonelli. And it's Christina, the one of the group that proved all the physics. So it's just fine. In this case, what you get is that the dynamics, low dynamics is related to bubbles. So what is a bubble? And so that you can make the difference and the similarity with the bubbles that you have in the case of Marcus and Francois. So you have bubbles. What is a bubble? So the bubble is a particular arrangement of particles here, such that all movements is, you can do all, you can move all the particle around. Okay, so I will be, if you want to know more, I will give you more details. But let's say the first thing is a particular, and this is important. Particular arrangements such that you can move. Okay, you can move inside. Okay, so you can construct, you can show, you can construct that this such a thing exists. And then this has a certain length. Sorry. What determines the length is the second property, is that, I mean, this moves, so typically you have to think that you have the system. If you try to move one particle, you cannot because it's blocked too many neighbors. Somewhere you have this arrangement here in which you can do the moves. But what you see is this move outside, there are a lot of particles. So, but this thing is so big that actually can use the random environment to move of one step. And actually what fixed the length is that, well, the denser is the system, or the lower is the temperature, the larger this has to be in order to be able to move. Okay, so the second thing is that, see, you can, I mean, let's say roughly speaking, you can move of one step, of, let's say you can move of psi, typically. So for a typical environment. And then what happens is what you can prove is that actually psi diverge at a certain finite density or temperature. Okay. And okay, let me just say the difference and the similarity. Yes.
So the kinetics of these objects is such that they don't disintegrate. They somehow.
Yeah, they cannot. This is the same thing actually that happens in Marcus' case. It's just that they are here. I mean, they can. They can actually, let's say, dilute a little bit. But if they dilute, they cannot move, so they will reform. This you can really see, you can see.
And these models have no disorder of any kind?
No, because these are models of supercooled liquids, so in principle they have disorder.
And this is the last question. Is this not related to the Janin transition?
The picture is more for hard objects. But so it's true that it's people that have studied these kind of things, they want to propose this more for the glass transition. Because in the jamming case, what you do is that you compress the system very fast. Here, the system is just at equilibrium. So maybe just, I mean, I can put here what is the difference and the similarity with the bubbles of Marcus and François, and then they can react. So, so here it's a particular arrangement, but it's not, let's say, a quote-unquote trigger particular arrangement. So it's not just asking to have a very low density or very high energy. It's very particular. And so the particular arrangement is particular. And then, well, there is this, the second thing, which is more similar, I think. Here you ask that this is big enough in such a way that you know that it can move everywhere. So, of course, in their case, it's more a question of resonance. Here it's more a question of diffusion in random environment. But, I mean, the idea is similar. If it's big enough, it will be able to move. So this was the side. And then the third thing is that here you see you have a finite temperature transition. So this bubble, I mean, the idea that I cannot have a finite temperature transition because, or a finite density, because somewhere I will have a region with high energy or low density and this can move. This doesn't work in this case because, as I told you, this is a very particular arrangement. And so this very particular arrangement has to be a certain size in order to move. And so while you have, you can really go with a finite temperature transition.
What is the reason there that the size of this must increase as one approaches the critical temperature of density?
Because otherwise you cannot move off one. So this bubble use actually must have a typical event. I mean, what you know is that if x is large enough, the bubble will use the disorder that you have here in order to move off one step. But I'm increasing the density, so actually it becomes more and more difficult to move.
So for example, if I think in this Debye model,
yeah.
Are you saying that there is a critical density where it becomes impossible to, where it just closes completely?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Because, I mean, you have an exponential number, I mean, the configuration space is separated in an exponential number of pockets.
Because naively one could say dynamic is still local. So if you have some place where there is an anomalously low density of spheres, it could be enough to create the notion, and that does not need to grow as the overall density gets increased.
Yeah, but no, I mean for the hard spheres in three dimensions, yes, I think it's true. But for this model, it's not.
So this model is not the same as the hard
spheres. This was just an example. This is our hard spheres in a box. These are models in which you really put, I mean, constraint, which you have particles that have to move, and they cannot move, they have too many neighbors. So these are particles jumping on the lattice. These are hard spheres in 3D.
But it's still locally defined, right? So it's not mean field.
No, no, everything is locally defined, and it's true. I mean, it's not enough to have a low density somewhere to have this low density moving inside the region. So actually, the so that you can show that you try to move, but then sooner or later it will find a region which no way you cannot pass.
So if you were above this, below this critical density, but you started with configurations that didn't have these particular arrangements, will they remain stuck or will they find these?
In principle, I don't know where. Well, first I have to say that it's very difficult to find. I mean, how to sample configuration without this is not be an easy task. In principle, equilibrium configuration has these things, and these things are very strange particular arrangements, so it's difficult to give a biasing sample. Now, if you fix that you don't want this bubble, maybe there could be other channel, meaning that, well, there will be lower critical density. So maybe there are other things that can be used which are not optimal. So in general, you use this one, but if you keep this one, the system will try to use the other ones. But I don't know the answer.
And is this constructed that you found particular?
So I think my task is to discuss the similarities and differences between these classical classes and MDL, and sort of a naive thought is that well, both questions are about non-ergodic systems that are really non-fully Gibbsian. They don't go to the Gibbs ensemble and they have a Meyerowitz initial state. So if you do something like this in an MDL system, you prepare an initial state, you look at the long-time dynamics, of course, you would see some. So if you're fully MDL, there's no question. There's a border question of how exactly that looks as you approach a transition and so on. So that's memory of an initial state as well. And so now you might think MDL is sort of the quantum class, but I would first like to say that quantum glass, or say quantum spin glass, for example, is not at all what MDL is. Because if I say quantum spin glass, then we take a spin glass, we add quantum fluctuations, and it is still a glass. That means there are still barriers that cause this elasticity breaking. It still looks like that if you have transverse field. And that I call a quantum glass despite quantum fluctuations. MDL per se is a quantum glass because of quantum fluctuations, or because of interference and discreteness in quantum mechanics. So this is really almost the opposite, and that is because of, if you want, right? So, and now you can ask maybe, the classical glass decorated with quantum fluctuations comes about basically because of the barriers. You have frustration, and the system is constrained. There are big barriers, and the dynamics doesn't go through the barriers. Or it doesn't tunnel through the barriers, if you wish, if you have a quantum glass. Many-body localization comes about because you have two small matrix elements between far away configurations, and because you don't have the resonances that would connect these regions. These are fundamentally different mechanisms, and one is not at all robust towards coupling to a bus, the MBL is not, whereas this kind of structure doesn't care whether you couple a small bus. So the ergodicity breaking that you have here is much, much more robust than you have here, right? But you can ask, what if I try to mix these things together? If I take a spin glass and ask, is there now MBL? Is there something interesting to say? For example, you can ask, does one type of phenomenon imply the other, or vice versa, or can you have one and not the other, and the opposite too? But the answer is, yes, you can have everything, nothing implies the other thing. And so I want to, and that's kind of natural, right? Because you know that MBL you can destroy by coupling a bus. That is usually, well, implicitly there's a bus there because you're using thermodynamics and you do symmetry breaking, and then you see there is symmetry breaking or not. But as soon as you couple a bus here, it's gone. So you shouldn't expect that somehow these two things are related. So let me give you examples. Say, and we call this type of thing ergodicity breaking, non-trivial ergodicity breaking. Because if you have an easing spin glass, you break the easing symmetry at TC, and everybody agrees on that, but then the community splits and people think you have real pure states here, exponentially many, and others that say you have only the easing related two states, and everything else is are fine at long time scale related net stability effects. okay. But in the field spin glass, you have long trivial ergodicity breaking, and here you have, absence of transform. And that's, again, not the same thing, right? You can have ergodicity breaking and still have transport. And you can have absence of transport and no spin glass order. You can have no border parameter that you see. So,
would you say that the community is split on the left on deciding if there's absence of transport or not?
No, I don't think.
Absence of ergodicity breaking.
I'm just saying that let's call these two phenomena ergodicity breaking, and this maybe absence of transport is what I mean by MBL. I'm saying these two are two different notions of non-equilibrium. And now I give you an example of ergodicity breaking without MBL. So that's basically just take an Reynolds Anderson spin glass, short range finite dimension, plus a very small transverse field. If you take spins that are continuous, then it's even more obvious that you will have the spin glass phase, it will be stable towards this transverse field, and there's still this barrier structure there. But this transverse field allows you to have spin waves on top of the frozen background. So this free energy picture here will only tell you that it's very difficult to get from here to here, but within each wiggle you have stuff that delocalizes. Spin waves, ripples on top of this frozen background that is not moving, right? So you have no MBL because of spin waves, for example, or phonons or whatever, vibrations. I think that's pretty generically to be expected. So if you take continuous spins, there's almost no way around that.
Excuse me.
But there's no full delocalized. It's not fully ergodic.
It's not fully ergodic, but there is transport. You transport spin, you transport energy all you like, and the only thing that you don't do is to establish the full Gibbs ensemble. You don't go from here to here.
So you still find an answer that's different if you compute it with the Gibbs ensemble versus what you actually have, but it's not zero.
Right, yes.
But I mean, in a finite dimensional system, you don't have any reason to believe there's anything more than trivial logicity breaking, right? I mean, it could just be the...
Well, that's to be.
I mean, yes, so it's not, but it's not clear one way or the other, so it's not.
Actually, that's true. Yeah. Can I suggest or ask about notation? So if the number of these distinct sort of states in a flat region is parallel in the system size, so certainly for the simplizing model, it's just two states, up and down. We don't really call that a logicity breaking, or do we?
We do.
In older books, but not nowadays. So, you know, the question is, you know, I want to differentiate interesting logicity breaking from all other states. So two states is not logicity. I mean, can we just say that two states is an Isaac model?
Okay, so then there the community splits, right? And there's the Fisher Hughes school, I think, who say there is only two states in a string.
No, but I want the real notations of what you call ergodicity break. I mean, so I feel like two states is something we sort of understand.
Yeah.
Parallel states, I don't want. I mean, I'm open to, but if you find exponentially many states in that flat domain, I think that's already something very. Yeah. That's finite entropy ergodicity breaking. That's that's in spirit. That's closer to MBL.
Right, and that is true in the mean field models, and beyond that we don't.
Okay, fine. Yeah. But if that's the case, then you know, again, coming back to maybe it's on your list. Apologize if I jumped the gun, but in that sense, full MBL is when you have, you know, L to the D microscopic degrees of freedom, and you have L to the D conserved quantities. And so if I take a logarithm of the exponential number of states in that manifold, that would suggest that I have some density of conserved, some extensive number of conserved quantities. And so if I have a finite density of conserved quantities, that's sort of a...
But it's not full, so it's extensive.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be full. We don't have examples of that, even in MBL, but of having less than...
So this thing is finite. That means it's a fraction of the degrees of freedom
is frozen.
Are frozen. But the rest is still...
Right. So it's like having lots of, as I think Julia already said, there's having lots of values, but within each value you have a finite entropy density, so you can have transport coefficients if you want. Right. Okay.
Actually, there is a belief that, I mean, in the classical case, you cannot really have ergodicity breaking with an exponential number of states.
Except in the mean field model.
Except in the mean field model, in finite dimensions.
Okay. The general arguments for that?
Yeah.
Okay. I would like to, maybe later.
Right, but maybe, I mean, that was maybe one of my points to say, but I mean, a qualitative difference between MBL pure and the glass case is that there are, in the glass case, there are degrees of freedom that are very, very slow and others that are kind of fast, and they talk only very weakly together. That's why maybe this is only a field picture, but in the end it will not be there. But there's a huge separation of time scales, and I don't see that happening in MBL. In MBL, somehow, these local integrals of motion are all living on the scale xi, more or less, and there's not one huge thing that is very well conserved and something else that is very little conserved, which commutes badly with the Hamiltonian, something which almost completely commutes with the Hamiltonian. So it's somehow a flat hierarchy, and there is no analogy of this kind of hierarchy of states. You cannot label the states in a meaningful fashion by the local integrals of motion and then say there's a substructure. These states are more equal than others.
No, but I think the thing you should compare to is not full MBL, but rather something with a mobility edge. I mean, your bubbles will introduce all kinds of time scales.
Well, for some days I thought maybe there is some, if you have a mobility edge and integrals of motion that depend on the state where you are, then there could be some clustering like that, but I think that's not true.
one could think about this again, but I don't think. So now this was one example of having ergodicity breaking but no MBL, and now, well, MBL without ergodicity breaking is also very simple. You just take some easing model with a very small transverse field and you go to high temperatures. If the easing model has some disorder, the transverse fields will be too weak to establish a mixing between the classical configurations and your NPL, but thermodynamically there's, of course, you're sitting up here. If you take, say, the SK model at high temperature, or Edwards-Anderson, it's with some disorder. So you just take small transverse field again, and you go to T much higher than TC, and if you take this sufficiently small, then this will be MBL, but it has nothing to do with ergodicity breaking.
You mean large transverse field, or?
No, small. So you make it extremely weakly quantumed, so it's almost classical, so there's basically no dynamics, and disorder that is there makes sure there isn't any dynamics. Then you just make it impossible for the system to go to the Gibbs equilibrium, but if you couple the path, it goes to equilibrium and you see a complete paramagnetic. Right, so this doesn't imply that, and vice versa, no.
Somehow to get rid of the ergodicity breaking, you couple to the path, and once you couple to the path, it's not MBL.
MBL, so I don't understand, that's why it's...
So, I mean, before you couple to the path, it's MBL.
Not large,
yes,
also the MBL paramagnetic.
Ergodicity breaking.
Okay, with ergodicity breaking, I mean, I just use the Gibbs ensemble and they ask, is there this structure? And I break contains the symmetry by applying the MBLism.
In that case, the kinetic and strain models don't have ergodicity breaking either, right? Even though they're strictly jammed by the definition. So I don't think it makes sense to define it that way.
Maybe you want the MBL paramagnetic.
Yeah,
that works.
Okay. I was thinking about thermodynamic models in Hamiltonian, and then I want to say I can have Hamiltonians where, as a function of temperature, I would have an ergodicity breaking transition, a spin glass transition, but I can have MBL way up in the phase diagram where there is no spin glass order yet. So. Just with two notions do not imply.
Well, Marx, don't you agree that by your definition now the classical model itself is not ergodic near infinite temperature?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But MBL is sort of, if we curve a classical system weakly enough, then it remains not ergodic. This thing that I said about the absence of this structure in MBL probably rules out that possibility that you are going. I think if you go to the MBL transition coming from the delocalized side, you make this kind of experiment with the correlation, you will see something like the spin glass. You won't see a plateau coming out of nothing.
Is this something known from simulation? I mean,
No, I don't think so, but I have a very hard time imagining.
I mean, it could be the case that the Griffiths regions, for whatever reason, gave you, you know, some of your dynamic response dominated by regions that were sort of finitely deep in the MBL phase, right? So, I mean, I think that's a possibility. I mean, it's not likely, but it's...
Okay, we can discuss, but
diverging lengths. Okay, time scales.
Maybe as a quick example, Chris and collaborators have looked at the quantum REM, and that has this kind of. So this is the transverse field gamma, and temperature, and the random energy model that this P going to infinity of those kind of models that. Leticia was discussing, and there's a phase diagram like that. This is TS, and then there's a TD in principle, which goes to infinity when P goes to infinity. And this kind of transition, there's actually some other first order transition. here, but that's not so interesting. And what you can say is, so here would be a breaking in this region, and what they find in this forward approximation, and this numerically in small systems, is that there is some MBL all over here. So that's an example of what I say here. If you take sufficiently small transverse field and you go to high temperatures, you get MBL basically for free, and there's no reason why this should start down here. But there's also no reason, I think, that this line always should keep out of this region. I think they can also have this, that would be a region here which is ergodicity breaking in the Gibbs ensemble, in the Gibbs sense, but it would not be MBL. Okay. Finally, a last comment and then I stop. That's about, well, you can ask if I have ergodicity breaking like this, and now I switch on fluctuations, what is actually going to happen? What can I say? Well, you will get, in general, thermalization between such a small wiggle of the energy landscape, and that gives you, in general, transport. But of course, you don't explore the full phase space until you hit this kind of border here, where you are ergodic. You know? But what also happens is that if you have two valleys of this landscape and they are nearly degenerate, let's say, and suppose this is the ground state and this is a first excitation over here, right? And now you switch on fluctuations, quantum fluctuations, then these quantum fluctuations will give self-energy, so to speak, to this ground state and the first excitation, move this up and down, second order perturbation theory, for example, can do. And there is no generic reason why this should remain the ground state as you vary the transverse field, and so basically you will have level crossings. But these level crossings are almost perfect, so as a function of transverse field, you will do something like this. This is the ground state originally, and then it becomes the excited state. And here the splitting is, of course, exponentially small because it takes you enormous tunneling rates here to connect these two states. So, and that's the reason why adiabatic quantum computation is bound to fail when you have an energy landscape like this, because there the idea is that you would try to find the ground state by slowly turning off the transverse field and always follow your ground state. You have to do that so slowly that you don't miss these crossings, but these crossings are generically exponentially small. I guess you all know that pretty well, but the point I want to make, some people say this is not working because of many-body localization. I would say it's not quite true. Within these valleys, you may still have transport and no many-body localization. It is actually not working because you have this ergodicity breaking, because you have these huge barriers and you cannot couple through the barriers.
Charles, what do you mean by transport in an infinite range model?
Nothing. So, but you could think of a finite size a spin glass, and you could ask why is the quantum adiabatic algorithm not good to find the ground state of a 3D Edwards-Anderson model. The reason is not because there's MBL, but the reason is because it still looks more or less like this, and you cannot go under these huge barriers, which are droplet configurations, which you have to flip, you know, to follow the ground state. Right. I think that's more or less my thoughts on the relation. So I think they are not. These are two different phenomena. The glass physics is barriers, MBL is matrix elements. it's quite interesting to think what happens when you mix the two things. For example, one interesting thing is if you take an SK model and you turn on quantum fluctuations, then this tremendous softness that you have down here gives actually rise to enhanced delocalization rather than localization. That's one thing that one can maybe say. And I guess one can play more games with trying to understand in more detail how the localization from between valleys and the localization inside valleys are interacting with each other and so on. Okay, but I think with that, we'll leave it. Thanks.